simply to make money. And they weren't concerned about the access that it would, the challenges it would present to access.
And I would add in Egypt, for example, which isn't subject to U.S. patent laws, it cost about $100 a pill, $10 in India. So it's only in this country where it costs so much.
Well, we're going to leave it there, but of course, we'll continue to follow the story. Bob Boyle, attorney for Mumia Abu-Jamal, and Renee Feltz, Democracy Now! Correspondent. And a correction to an earlier headline. The hacker sentenced to 52 months in prison after being extradited from Romania goes by the name Guccifer online, not Guccifer 2.0. Guccifer says he hacked Hillary Clinton's private server at her home in Chappaqua, New York. He pleaded guilty in May to charges including unauthorized access to a protected computer and aggravated identity theft. And that does it for our show. If you want to see the transcript or video or audio podcast of any of our broadcasts, go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Tarina Nadura, Andre Lewis, and Renee Feltz, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, and Paul Huckabee, our engineers.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 8 o'clock. Up next is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. And this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Seattle Theater Group. Presenting astrophysicist Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson on September 19th and 20th at the Keller Auditorium. Dr. Tyson will explore science as portrayed in pop culture. And for tickets and information for his September 20th show are available at portland5.com. And also by Portland 5, presenting The Trump Card, a breakdown of what makes Trump tick by storyteller Mike Daisy. Daisy tells Trump's story from his earliest days, tracking him as he makes himself into a new American archetype. The Trump Card takes place on September 25th at the Newmark Theater. Tickets and information are available at portland5.com.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring. We are seeking a full-time AM News and Public Affairs Director. Applications are due by 4 p.m. Friday, September 2nd, at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Applications may also be emailed. Send them to hiring@kboo.org. To apply, please send both a resume and a cover letter outlining your skills and experience with regard to the minimum qualifications. And please answer the question, why is KBOO important? For more information and a full job description, go to kboo.fm/AM News. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. Again, that's kboo.fm/AM News. And thank you.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
There comes a time.
Thank you.
And good morning. Good morning. It's 5 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, and you are listening to KBOO Portland, KBOO, your very own community radio station. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And here we are, positively revolting, as ever. We are excited to be talking with you again this morning about, well...
Excited, is that the word?
Excited, actually, is the word. Because, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
We're talking about violence against women. We're talking about rape culture. And the reason why I'm actually excited to talk about that is because it exists really only. It continues to exist because it's not talked about so much, right? I mean, in the last year or two, maybe we are actually talking about it more and more. But really, violence against women has existed in the dark corners of our public consciousness. I remember 30 years ago, maybe not quite 30 years ago, but it was close, some 20-something years ago, we had Suzanne Farr, who is she's a feminist writer and activist, out in Portland talking about trying to pass the Violence Against Women Act in the 80s is a piece of legislation that would consider violence against women as a hate crime, you know, gender-based violence as a hate crime. It would classify it thusly. And her response, the response that she received from Congress critters was, and one of them actually said it in so many words, that will never pass. If it did, it would... You know, there would be no end to it. It's so pervasive in our culture. And it only gets to exist that way because, in fact, we don't talk about it. We don't take it seriously. So here we are 20-something years later. And still, you know, we are looking at the water we're swimming in. It's so ubiquitous that we have to discuss it out loud. We have to engage each other in conversation. We have to strategize ways to end this. And I gotta say, ending violence against women is not a woman's responsibility, right? So we encourage our brothers to call this morning and let us know what you are doing to end rape culture and what you are doing to end violence against women. Women, we encourage you to call and share your stories, share your truths. And what are you doing to, in fact, you know, bring truth to light and end violence in our lives?
Besides not wearing a short skirt in public.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And again, you can see exactly how little ground we've gained when we, in fact, still see references to what women were wearing when they were assaulted. We still hear these things about, well, you know, that's kind of suggestive. Do you think you should wear that out? I actually heard somebody say that a couple weeks ago. And I'm just kind of floored. It's like a jaw-dropping moment for me we police each other, women police each other, to make sure that we're staying somewhere within these, you know, proscribed lines of trying to, what, take responsibility for our own victimization. I mean, I don't understand this. It doesn't work. It doesn't matter, really. Rape culture, do we even need to say it again?
Mm-hmm.
Rape culture, apparently we do, does not matter one iota what a woman is wearing. That is not a part of the deal.
Well, and also... The burden, the oppression of that women are sort of brought up with about watching what you do, where you're doing it. Look over your shoulder, get an apartment so you can see outside. You want to be able to see who's at the door before you open it. There's about 50 different things or 8 million different things that we are supposed to be looking for all the time.
You had that great list that you're reading right before you went on
yes,
the air.
Yes, and I'm trying to find... This is from a blog by a woman named Melissa McEwen. It's called Rape Culture 101, and she wrote it October 9th, 2009. But let's just say that everything in it is extremely... Like, that many years is going to make it...
Yeah, sadly.
Sadly.
Still absolutely pertinent.
Well, it's telling girls and women to be careful about what you wear, how you wear it, how you carry yourself, where you walk, when you walk there, with whom you walk, whom you trust, what you do, where you do it, with whom you do it, what you drink, how much you drink, whether you make eye contact, if you're alone, if you're with a stranger, if you're in a group, if you're in a group of strangers, if it's dark, if the area is unfamiliar, if you're carrying something, how you carry it, what kind of shoes you're wearing in case you have to run, what kind of purse you carry, what jewelry you wear, what time it is, what street it is, what environment it is, how many people you sleep with, what kind of people you sleep with, who are your friends are, to whom you give your number, who's around when the delivery guy comes to get an apartment you want to see, who's at the door before they can see you, to check before you open the door to the delivery guy, to own a dog or a dog sounding machine, to get a roommate, to take self-defense, to always be alert, always pay attention, always watch your back, always be aware of your surroundings, never let your guard down for a moment lest you be sexually assaulted, and if you are and didn't follow all the rules, it's your fault.
And that's pretty much what we're talking about in a nutshell. 503-231-8187. We invite you to join in the conversation. 503-231-8187. Also, you can follow along throughout the week on Facebook. You can like our fan page there, Positively Revolting. You can also follow along in the Twitterverse, where you can find us at Positive Revolt. And, you know, to that, I wanted to add a little something.
Add a little something, just like a little spice.
A little something.
To the this is cookie mix.
This is one of those things that I'm not flabbergasted. I'm not even surprised, but here it is. So you may well recall when we spoke about this subject previously, I think it was maybe one or two shows on rape culture ago. We were talking about the case of the Stanford University swimmer, Brock Turner, who was convicted of raping...
an unconscious woman.
An unconscious woman. It's true. And he received 6 months and has just been released from jail after serving 3 of them.
On good behavior.
Because Judge Aaron Persky... didn't want to, you know, unfairly impact this young swimmer's life. He had such a promising future, and to give him more than 3 months was to damage his academic career.
Judge Persky feels that he is free to interpret laws.
Yes, well, apparently he does feel free to interpret laws because he just sentenced somebody else, another man,
of Latino distraction.
Let's just say is not white. Yeah. To actually what is considered a standard sentence of 3 years. Now, I'm not going to say, oh my God, this, you know, Latino man should not get 3 years because Brock Turner didn't get 3 years. No, that is not actually where I'm going with this. The fact that Raul Ramirez raped his roommate and got sentenced accordingly, that's not really my issue. My issue is, though, Persky, the same judge, 2 crimes that were dang near identical. I mean, there's a lot going on that's very similar. Ramirez's roommate was not unconscious. That might be one of the bigger differences. That he would feel fine sentencing, you know, Ramirez to 3 years, which is, from what I understand, a standard term. And this white swimmer dude to, you know, 3 months.
Six
months, but, you know, often 3. Cause,
well, heck, a 3 this
he's
time.
He's a white swimmer guy.
So well, that's, he behaved
again,
very
I
well.
Just want to throw that out there in terms of things that make my head spin around until I can't see straight. I just really am disheartened. There's racism in the system. What can I say about that? There's also, you know, but again, to really look at the crimes of violence against women and to be looking at how we are blamed for crimes committed against us. And whether that is actually in terms of rape or domestic violence, partner battering, you know, all of these things. Again, it's always kind of like, well, what did you do? What did you do to provoke him? How did you, you know, and again, you know, if we're talking about sexualized violence, then, you know, what did you do to basically encourage it? Why didn't you fight him harder? To, if you are in fact being battered, what did you do to cause it? Why did you make him so angry? And these, again, are still ubiquitous attitudes in our culture. It is maddening, I think, that we are in 2016 and these are still prevalent attitudes. So that's what we would love to engage in the conversation with you about this morning. 503-231-8187. Violence against women, what are the roots of violence against women? Generally, I think that they are rooted in unequal power relationships, and we call it the patriarchy. We call it male dominance. And it is a... it is really at crux what is wrong with the world. I'm going to put it out there. Patriarchy. What do we do about it? What do we do to actually equalize that power imbalance? What do you say, Lynn?
Well, I say back to Melissa McEwen's blog, rape culture is encouraging men to use language of rape to establish dominance over one another also.
Oh, absolutely.
It is making... rape a ubiquitous part of the male exclusive bonding. Rape is ignoring the cavernous need for men's prison reform, in part because the threat of being raped in prison is considered an acceptable deterrent to committing crime. And the threat only works if actual men are actually being raped. Interesting. I think we have a caller. Yeah, Aaron.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning. As far as Brock, disgusting. I don't think I need to say that, but I looked at what Judge Persky said and his father, the whole comment about 20 minutes of action, but his mother, there's a letter that she wrote to the judge as well, because as far as I'm concerned, like I'm a person of color, so I have empathy towards certain movements such as, you know, civil rights and Black Lives Matter. When I read his mother's letter to the judge, you know, talking about her beautiful boy, his grin is gone forever, please don't send him to jail, he won't survive. I'm thinking to myself, there's no mention in her letter about the victim. So this is a woman. This is somebody's mother, and this is somebody's, you know, somebody's wife. So what's going on to where another woman would, you know, even though this is her son, and I totally understand that,
yeah,
but even if I had a child, wrong is wrong. You know, and what this guy did was utterly disgusting, but for some reason, this family, either they're cloistered or just have enough money and power.
We call that privilege, I think.
Yeah, it's totally privileged. So after reading the letter from the mother, I'm like, okay, so he's going to get a pass from the mother and the father because, and for some reason, this kid's never going to learn a lesson because in his mind, he did nothing wrong. In
right.
the judge's mind, he didn't really do anything wrong. He got caught.
Right.
That's the crime, that he got caught.
That's exactly it.
And when you mentioned race, being a person of color, luckily I get a chance to mentor black males in the Portland area, which I love to do. And what I teach them when it comes to this issue is that, number one, if a woman says no, no. No means no. There is no, well, this, well, that. There's no, it's not cut and, it's cut and dry. It's black and white.
Yeah.
No means no. But I also have to teach them to be cognizant and aware of their, and this isn't saying, oh, you know, like for a woman, you know, even the young women, like you still need to be aware and cognizant of yourself. There's one young man, he's a huge guy, and he was in a situation, and he told me he was with this young woman. She got mad. I'm like, you know what? You have to realize you're in college, number one, but you have to be aware of your situation, because coming from the South, I've seen situations as well where a young man, football player, you know, doing, you know, he was a good kid, yada, 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 decided as a senior who was 18 to become involved with a 17-year-old, which is
yeah.
statutory. I totally understand that. The thing was, when her family found out and pressed charges, he was still convicted of being a rapist because she was white and he was black. He is still a sex offender to this day. What he did is, and I'm not trying to, I'm just being realistic. If that's the case, I know a lot of young people in high school that are probably going to end up going to jail. So, and what I would have told that young man is the same thing I tell these young men that I mentor. You need to be aware. You need to be cognizant, because the situation when it comes to race and this thing are still sort of case in point with Brian Banks. And that was another black woman. He was accused of sexually assaulting someone, went to jail, did not do it. I still tell people to be cognizant and aware. I tell that to women. I tell that to men, because I would hate to see a young woman get assaulted for any reason whatsoever. It's never her fault. But I've also seen young men, especially young men of color, be accused of this when I know that they didn't do it. But guess what? That's not the way the system works. So I just tell them to be cognizant and aware of your surroundings. And if you feel like you're in a bad situation, you need to leave. Because, you know, the accusation, or, you know, if you're just accused of it, even if you didn't do it. And most of the time, that's rare. That's a rare occasion that someone's going to accuse you of sexual assault. That's not the case. But if you're in a situation, hey, this doesn't feel right, you need to leave. Because as a male or a female, get out of the situation as quickly as possible. Because, you know, I would hate to see a woman or a man, you know, in a situation where a sexual assault can occur.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. That I think it's super important to listen to your instincts. Like, and again, when something feels wrong, get out. I think that that is good advice for everyone. And absolutely, the racism inherent in the system and in our society is, I mean, again, ubiquitous, right? And that does absolutely play a part in sentencing. And it does absolutely, I think, it absolutely plays a part in who's found guilty and who's not found guilty. So I thank you very much for calling in and bringing up those points.
Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. Thank you. 503-231-8187, the number to call this morning. Do chime on in. We are talking about rape culture. We are talking about violence against women. We are talking about, how do we end this? What do we do? How do we get out of this total mess? One thing, and I'm really glad Aaron brought up listening to your instincts. I've been talking to a lot of young women lately, teenage women, who are telling me of their experiences of being followed, of finding guys on Max. I have apparently not ridden Max very often. I know this. I haven't ridden Max very often. There was a woman who was upset, totally angry, totally upset that she was on Max and she saw a guy sort of sitting in the aisle holding his phone in such a way that she could tell that he was getting video that would be, oh, how do we say this, popularly known as upskirts shots. You know, so as women walked by, he could, well, yeah, film under their skirts. And, you know, she's telling me that she saw this and I'm acting like, oh my God, that's, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was immediately kind of set, well, corrected. I want to say set straight, as that wouldn't happen. But I was, my opinions were updated by a couple of other women who were there saying, you know, actually on Max, happens all the time. And again, mind blown. What are we talking about? Like, why? What? Oh, yeah, common. Okay, well, does TriMet know? What are they doing to stop that? You know, what can we do as neighbors, as a city, as a culture to stop that? What is that about? Like, why do we just say, oh, yeah, happens all the time, because it's ubiquitous, because we inure ourselves to it, because to do otherwise is to actually risk our own, you know.
They have signs that say, report a dangerous behavior.
What, see it, say it? What? You know, I mean, it's like.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying, that's, you know, part of the thing is that people, I know, I remember as a young woman being so shocked sometimes about that sort of thing that I didn't consciously just get up and report that behavior or even say something to somebody who's doing something like that. Like, hey, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What is that about? It is harder when you're a younger person, well, for some, to do that sort of thing, but what a good idea.
Well, and again, this gets me back to Aaron's point of following your instincts. When something seems wrong to you, it's probably wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so to pay attention, I've been, again, in conversations with a lot of young women who second-guess themselves, you know, as we all do, as we're trained to do, because we don't want to be wrong, because to be wrong in those situations would be to be rude. Like, we would just be, like, yelling at a strange guy, you know, to quit following us or whatever, you know, to back off. But what if we were wrong? What if that wasn't what he, and then we would be rude, and that would be, like, horrible.
Better rude than raped, I always say.
You know, right. You know, so I think there's a lot of that training that we need to unlearn. The be polite, the be nice, the don't say anything. I think we've gone some ground on unlearning it, but not far enough, really. Not anywheres far enough.
And just in, apparently Brock Turner will serve the rest of his rape sentence in this poor unsuspecting town, which of course we have the name of, Dayton, Southeast Dayton, in Sugar Creek Township. Is that Dayton, Ohio? I don't know. It doesn't say here. Or California. He'll spend 3 years on probation in this lovely little town. Lucky them.
Rightio.
So they shifted him to a little leafy town, little tree drenched.
Well, I mean, he's out of jail. He just has to. He's on probation for another few years. So he shifted himself. You know, I mean, it's not like he's in custody anymore. Maybe his parents did it so he could, you know, get away. Who's to know?
This has been stressed so much.
He doesn't enjoy the taste of steak anymore. I remember that in his mother's letter. Anyway, let's go ahead and talk to Mitch, shall we? Good morning, Mitch. You're on the line.
Yes, good morning, and thanks for putting out the request for guys to call in and ask what we've been doing. And the approach I've taken is one in which I challenge myself and those who are either related or in social circles to question our own investment in identity politics and how institutional corruption, sometimes we don't think we're engaging in identity politics, but we identify with things like alumni. You know, you can be really proud of a university you come from, and then you look at what the university covers up. We only find that out after it somehow the cover-up is pierced, like the Penn State situation.
Ah, yes.
And in my case, I'm an alumni of UC Berkeley, and if you look at what has been going on at the UC Berkeley Law School, with one dean after another being forced to resign because of sexual harassment, which might be a level lower than rape, but is more pernicious because
it's in the family.
It affects career advancement, and the reason women weren't talking about the various deans of the law school at UC Berkeley was because they felt that they would jeopardize career advancement.
Right.
And so it's not just individuals who worry about career advancement. There's also this identity component where at Penn State, they wouldn't go after the Joe Paterno's assistant of the great football program, who it was a very open secret that he was fond of young boys in the shower. And it, you know, the victimhood was approaching 100 kids over a period of decades, and nobody said anything because nobody wanted to tar this great rah-rah association they had with the Penn State football machine.
Right, they wouldn't be getting as much money.
Right, and it's all part of how we each develop our own identities, and so getting under that sort of those sort of pernicious aspects of it, I just, you know, I try doing it in the ways I can, but I encourage you to bring that out into the open as well.
Thanks. That reminds me of a movie called Spotlight.
Right.
Yeah, where it was very hard for the Spotlight is this group of investigative reporters with the Boston Globe at the time, and they bit by bit unearthed what was going on with the Catholic Church and priests raping boys.
With much
and
resistance.
Girls. Much resistance. Much, much, much resistance. And that's what I thought of when, but I forgot about the Penn State thing. Thank you for reminding us.
And I encourage people to look into more recently the UC Berkeley law school situation, because again, a lot of times we think this only goes on in leafy Ivy League private schools, but in public universities, there is just as much of that rah-rah identity, sense of identity building that goes on. Even among people who consider themselves progressive, it's just, you know, oh, I'm UC Berkeley, I'm not Stanford, you know, I'm the public university here. But there was a cover-up for a long time.
Right.
Well, thanks.
Thanks very much for your call, Mitch. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. For men, please let us know what you are doing to call out rape culture, call out violence against women. What are you doing to end violence against women? What are you doing to end the patriarchy? For women, how are you surviving the patriarchy? What are you doing to stay strong and empowered? How are you reaching out and helping your sisters?
Here's another piece that we haven't quite discussed yet. And this is just a couple sentences again from Melissa McEwen's blog. Rape culture is the narrative that sex workers can't be raped. Rape culture is the assertion that wives can't be raped. Rape culture is the contention that only nice girls can be raped.
Yeah, that's true. That is rape culture. You know, another part of rape culture, something I have seen actually here. And that is, you know, many years ago, there is a person who we had to say goodbye to because, in fact, he touched women in an inappropriate way here. And, you know, he's a sort of a big deal in a particular musical community and has since passed away. All right. So.
Enough said, she
that
says.
That said. you know, even though it was known amongst other DJs here as to why he ended his time at KABU, why KABU ended his time with us, that still, last week, there was a DJ that decided that he was going to pay a tribute to this guy because he was kind of a big deal in this community, in this particular genre. Didn't matter that there were women in the building that were still traumatized. Right. Because, well, but he's such a important figure in the genre, was the answer. But he was, you know, he did that a couple times. He probably wasn't in his right mind when he did that, was the answer. Because somebody, let's just say me, confronted the DJ. A couple of other women did, too. And you know, but he was such a big deal. He was a nice guy, really. It's just he did these other things, and there are probably medical reasons for them. That's rape culture, right? That's putting...
In a nutshell,
It's Brock Turner. It's putting a man's reputation above a woman's lived experience and feelings. Mm-hmm. That's rape culture. Okay. Let's talk to Rachel, shall we? Good morning. 503-231-8187, the number to call. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning, ladies. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm great. It's Friday.
Excellent.
Can't complain. I'm sitting here listening, and I firstly want to say my premise and my foundation is solidly that a rape victim is not always. And
it's not always what?
That what the woman is saying in the book, or how whoever is reading it, that that it's always her fault that she does not do these things, every single one of these things, or a guy, if they don't take every single one of those steps, then it was their fault. And I just feel that that's unrealistic. I think that a rape victim, there's I'm going to borrow his saying, but he says violence is for the violator, not the victim. And I firmly believe that. And
I'm not sure I understand that. Can you unpack that for me?
Yeah. This author, his name is Monty Roberts. He's actually a horse trainer. It's called a join-up type training for horses, but he has a book called Horse Sense for People. And his premise is violence, you know, is never good. And I absolutely agree. And people who are raped, I'm a student, almost finishing up a dual major, criminology, criminal justice, and political science. And I see the outcomes like you do, and you just have to scratch your head. And at the same time, I see what happens to these people who have had these crimes perpetrated on them, and the lasting damages. Personalities change dramatically. And I'm really sorry that that person didn't have enough prudence to realize the sensitivity for the young ladies who were accosted by that person who worked there that no longer does. But I really firmly believe that whether a woman is, like you said, a prostitute, what have you, I think that when you say no, no means no. To talk about the judges, it's like, how do you fix this? There's great ways to fix this. Through election processes, you find out how the state is run, if they can recall a judge, if they can vote him out. You start doing campaigns. I know in Oregon, where I'm from, recall is an option, and it's only a percentage of whatever was voted in, I think, the gubernatorial election, that if you get that percentage, whether it's a county or a city, in whatever level it is, you can recall that person by putting it on a petition on a special election, mm-hmm. which is very, very powerful, and it's a great fail-safe the way I love Oregon does that. And I would encourage those people in those states that's happening, you can change your judges and just find out how that is done through your own political cycle in your states. I remember one time with my daughter when she was young, we were walking into Walmart, and we were in California, and we were walking to the parking lot, and it was dark, not very well lit in this particular area. And there was a guy that was approaching us, and it doesn't really matter to me what nationality a person right. is. I mean, you're either living right or you're not
right.
and making good choices. And, I mean, his junk's just out, and he's just busy. And I was so pissed off. I mean, this guy turned around when he saw that I saw him, and he started heading the other direction. And I'm just hardwired that way. I followed him, and I said, "You follow close behind." But I said, "This guy just did this, and I want you to call the police." And he looked at me, and because of the same nationality, and I said, "You're going to do something?" And he says, "Well, it's really not our call." And I said, "What?" And the guy takes off out the door. And I was very, very shocked by that. So I think my attitude is, if you're on a bus, a train, where you're standing waiting for a train, I don't care where it is, you always go, regardless of what their response is to you, you go to that person and you say, "This individual is doing that, and it's probably safer not to confront the individual because you don't know how they're going to react to you." Unless you really are sure of yourself. And so those people who are on the buses see people with cameras. I think they should report it. If the bus driver seems sensitive to it and says, "I'm going to do something about that," which guy is it? You'll know they're going to do something. If they start asking questions like that, can you point him out? What does he look like? They'll look to the mirror. And if
it's
not...
Just to interrupt you for a second, it was on the train, and it's a little harder to get to the operator of the train.
Then you call on your own cell phone?
No, I agree.
Go ahead, Lou. Let her finish.
Yeah, sorry.
In that situation, I would find the phone number. I would call Amtrak, if that's who it was, or the local bus system, and I would be telling them, and law enforcement, I would be calling 911 from their bus, and I'd say, "There's a man here that is photographing, videotaping women, I believe." And law enforcement they will say, where are you at? Well, we're here. We're at this location. This is the, can you see the bus number? Because it's inside right. those trains. There's a number. And they'll say, thank you very much. And they'll dispatch somebody. I know that they really get on that stuff because they have details, special units that focus just on that stuff. So I don't think I, in that case, TriMet, in our situation, I would never be calling them. I would be calling from the bus or the train, in that matter. If it's the MAC, okay. I would be calling 911, local law enforcement, wherever you are, is going to pick it up. They're going to dispatch somebody, and they'll have
Here's the thing, Rachel. One more, just going to do this one thing.
Go ahead.
In most states, and I really don't know Oregon's laws, but in most states, legal precedent has said shooting footage of women without their consent is okay. It's legal.
Well, I wouldn't care. You know what?
I'm just saying, if you're going to call the police and say this man's taken videos of women illegally, it might not be. I don't know Oregon's law.
Well, this is the reason that I would do it. It's empowering. And hey, if the civil rights would have just said, gee, you know what, law's this way, we're just not going to, how it's going to turn out. Things would be a lot different today. And although we still do have racism, it would be light years in the reverse. Mm. I really encourage people, regardless. I raised my daughter this way, harden the target. And I think that's probably what that author is trying to do. I think they took a, without being able to, interview somebody, you don't really know where their head was at when they wrote it. But I think any woman, any guy, I always tell them, harden the target. Law enforcement, what that means is keep yourself in well-lit areas. Try to avoid these types of areas.
And, we've sort of covered some of that, and I really appreciate your comments this morning. But
you're great, gal.
Thanks
thank
a lot. We're
going
to have to move on.
Hey, thank you very much, Rachel. Take care. And to let you know what's coming up this morning on KABU, at 9 o'clock, Kristen Yant hosts Water World, a monthly discussion of water politics near and far. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. And oh, so much more, packed into 15 minutes. At 10:15, Flashpoints takes a close look at journalism and reporting on U.S. involvement in wars by the media with veteran war correspondent, author, and filmmaker Don North. We also feature the Electronic Intifada with Nora Barrows-Friedman. At 11 o'clock, we speak with Ali Sharif, founder of organizations promoting permaculture in Latin America and Africa. And at 11:30, David Swanson speaks with Maurice Carney, co-founder and an executive director of Friends of the Congo, and Harvey Wasserman, activist, teacher about racism, environmentalism, and ending war. Thanks, KABU members, for making this all possible with your generous support. If you are not a current member, you can take care of that rather embarrassing problem by going to kboo.fm, clicking on donate, and instantly improving your life and your community.
In one swelled foop.
Do it now.
Yes.
All right. So much to say. Oh, so much to say, but it's true. And this is one of those things that I really got to put out there. This was actually published in Time magazine just last month. The article is called, "Yes, It's Legal to Take Pictures Up a Woman's Skirt Without Her Consent." Holly Curl, the founder of Stop Street Harassment and the author of Stop Global Street Harassment. She's also a consultant, and she writes this article, which I found kind of eye-opening. I'm going to go ahead and post it on the, oh yes, Positively Revolting Facebook page. You too can check out the Positively Revolting Facebook page. You can...
Always interesting things
You can
there.
Like us.
Yeah, because an hour a week is just not enough.
That's right. We want to continue this conversation. There's so much to talk about. You could be our 705th. Fan on our page. But yeah, I'm going to post that link right now so that everyone can check out really this legal I don't want to say horror, but it's really messed up. We'll say it's messed up in this.
Well, and you know, as far as recalling judges, Judge Persky, sort of, there was a huge movement to recall him, and then instead they kind of let him go, not sort of recuse himself from trying criminal cases anymore, and now he's sort of backbenched himself, so to speak. He has, so he's off the bench, but he's still in the legal system.
There we are.
Yes.
All right. So let's, let's talk to George. Good morning, George. You're on the air.
The issue of rape really, really concerns me. And the reason primarily is because I'm no longer able to jog with my wife. She's very attractive in my mind, and she is a daily jogger. As a matter of fact, as I speak to you, she's out jogging in Council Crest. And I just sit here and I worry myself sick with concern about her being attacked one of these mornings. It just drives me crazy.
You know, someone's attractiveness has nothing to do with them being raped. That is a huge misunderstanding.
So I understand your concern, but I want to go ahead and throw it out there that whether your wife is attractive or not has nothing to do with it.
Oh, really? I thought it would to me if I were a rapist, I guess.
Well, I don't know really what to say to that. I'm a little floored.
Well,
that would be, you know, something that would even come to your mind.
I'm just sitting here and I'm so
glad. Well, we're sorry about that, George.
Get back home.
All right, George, you know, there's about 100 ways to go from this conversation, and none of them are good. And most of them involve language I can't say on the air. Your proprietary nature towards your wife is a little disturbing. The fact that you seem to believe that attractiveness and rape are linked because somehow or another rape is a natural outcome of sexual desire is more than disturbing. We're going to let you go.
And thanks for your call.
Better luck next time. I don't know what to say. Every now and again,
I think you said it. I think you got right in there. Let's go to Paul.
22 years on the air, and occasionally I can't think of what to say.
Oh, honey, you did. Okay. Don't worry about it. Came right out. Okay, Paul.
Good morning,
yes,
Paul.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, I'm calling to, I hope, sort of fill out this discussion a little bit. When I was 15 years old, I hope I can get through this without breaking down. I was raped by a 19-year-old woman who, I just want to kind of mention this experience because, as you can hear, I'm kind of...
Yeah, go ahead.
Not feeling very good telling you about it, but believe me, this was a horrifying experience that I live with every day. This woman overpowered me. She grabbed me by the genitals and squeezed so hard that I screamed. She threw me down on the bed, and it was just a horrifying experience, and I didn't speak about it. This is the first time I've ever spoken about it other than to friends and family, and I think that we need to realize that rape knows no gender.
I think that is true. I am going to say, and not to diminish your pain at all, which is real, and I'm very, very sorry, really, for your experience.
But
there are a significant number of men in this country who are raped.
Yes, and I think that as I listened to your program, I didn't hear every minute of it, but has this rape knows no gender element found a place in the discussion so far today on your show?
No, I would say not particularly, and I'm going to tell you why. Not because it's not important, but because... by and large, between 2/3 and 98%, depending on where you're getting your statistics from, of sexual assaults are perpetrated by men against women. A significant portion of sexual assaults, the vast majority of sexual assaults perpetrated against men are perpetrated by other men. It is not to say that a woman never sexually assaults a man. This has also happened to a very good friend of mine. You know, but that the numbers are, and when it happens to you, it doesn't matter what the numbers are. I get that very strongly.
That's right, and it's very important that
but
you
the numbers
that.
Are
it doesn't
small.
It doesn't matter.
And so it's yeah.
It doesn't matter.
I get you, George.
Those who have experienced it.
I get you, George.
That and if I had a nickel for every time I'd been told what you just told me, I would have a lot of nickels.
I understand. I
and
really
I think
do.
That I'd like to express my opinion that for those of us whose lives have been ruined, in terms of their ability to have kind of a normal feeling about their sexual lives, we don't really want to hear for the 50 millionth time how we're in the minority. And I'm not accusing you, ma'am. I think you're very well-intentioned and are trying to do the right thing. But this language of minimization, of we're in the statistical minimum, I'm sorry about your experience, but you're in the statistical minimum, I don't really think is the best language as someone who's had to live with this for the last roughly 30 years. I don't think that this language is our best language. And I think that, in my experience, language is a huge part of this. And I would just encourage everybody to think that rape knows no gender, and that if you're in a statistical minority and your life is ruined, you don't care if you're in a statistical minority. And I would encourage that whenever a man comes forward and has the courage, as I have today, I've sat here for 40 minutes trembling to make this call, that we try to think if there's a better language than our first response is that we're in a statistical minority. And I know you're responding to why the rape knows no gender element hadn't made a place in your discussion, which is the question that I asked you. So
exactly.
This is not coming from a place of criticizing you, but I just think that maybe we could think, is there a better response than to immediately go to that? And I thank you for
the
this
response
discussion,
is,
and I hope we can open it up to this idea more, that that can be a new element, is this rape knows no gender.
I think really what we need to look at is ending sexual violence, period, right? And that is ending sexual violence. To recognize it for what it is and to talk about a culture of enthusiastic consent, that, you know, that is healthy sexuality, really, regardless, around the board. Sexual violence is appalling. It's bad, and it ruins lives. And that is, in fact, why we want to call it out. Hey, Paul, thank you very much for giving us a call today.
All right. Let's open up the discussion.
Okay, thanks very much, Paul. 503-231-8187. And good morning, Sunny. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning. Good morning. Important subject. Will be interesting to see what comes of the assault activities out of Philomath based upon hazing.
What are you talking about, Sonny? Because I don't know.
Well,
Fill us in.
Sounds like it was on the evening news the other night, and a number of football players off at football camp were sexually assaulted by other football players, and the ringleader is the assistant coach who's up for charges, and he lives in Corvallis, and they didn't show his picture or anything like that. So it will be interesting to see how this is addressed, and it's a very, very difficult situation for the entire community, no doubt, and my sympathy goes towards those who were victimized. I feel bad about that. And under radical matriarchy, we can perhaps step away from predation, because it's like, do you want to be a predator and prowl upon other humans, or do you want to be a nurturer and bonder? And if you want to be a whole human being, male or female, go with matriarchy, because women do support and embrace and care about very much whole males. But, you know, we've got the Justice Channel on our television, which has show after show after show outlining one horrible crime against a woman, generally 24 hours a day. Let's tell the truth. Women are preyed upon. And now maybe a man doesn't have to go to all the effort of, you know, stalking and making his plans for that. Maybe he can just pull out a camera and start messing with women's heads mentally while they're just sitting there trying to get to work their underpaid
right.
job. I'm getting sick of it all. And so I just say, men, turn to, you know, if you're a wholehearted, whole mind man, turn to women. We're waiting for you. More of you are coming. Understand that under matriarchy, which is based upon what is best for the child across the child's entire lifespan, even preconception, then you will have the opportunity to live a whole, protected, loved, cared for, contributing life, because otherwise we're just under a predatory death cult, largely negative male influenced, although a few women are catching up.
Thank you so much.
Down with the predatory death cult.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for your comment, Sunny.
Thanks, Sunny. And yeah, for those like myself who were just a little, coach and six Philomath football players are cited in an aggravated hazing case at a football camp. This is high school varsity, actually.
Raw team.
And you too can look it up. learning about stuff on the air. Wow. Okay, let's over to you.
Let's squeeze Colin in.
Good morning.
We've got very Good little morning. Show left, but we welcome your comment if it's short and sweet.
Okay, I'll make it really short and sweet. And anyway, as a parent, you know, of two girls and being a single father for 5 years, one of the things I realized to try to help empower my girls in the environment in which somebody is harassing them or making, you know, inappropriate comments or things like that is to encourage them while I was there to stand up for, you know, their own personal well-being by empowering them to say things that are, like, that's inappropriate, and I do not want to participate in that this type of environment, even if it's something that's, you know, someone close to them. I've had many incidences in which, even in family, I'll give you just a quick family. This is where I was there, and one of my son-in-laws said, my daughter said, suggested she might go to the Philippines to teach English, and he said, well, you can't let her go there because they might abduct her or something. I said, why are you talking to me about one of her choices? You need to talk directly to her. And just to be the type of, you know, father figure that it will, you know, always have their back when they're trying to support, you know, what it is that, you know, what they believe in, rather than feeling ashamed of saying or feeling some form of guilt or, you know, not wanting a confrontation or conflict in that, you know, process. And and I'm happy to say that both, you know, my girls are very, you know, strong-minded, strong-willed human beings that really don't put up with that stuff anymore.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you very much for your comments this morning, and keep up the good work.
I'm also a little...
All right. Well, thank you guys for your show.
You're welcome.
A little troubled by anyone thinking anyone's going to be abducted if they go overseas pretty much anywhere. But that's...
Well, his comment was to talk to his daughter.
Totally.
Just, and she can say that.
That's where my head goes. It's like, why don't you confront your friend on being silly and potentially bigoted? Okay, let's wrap it up, I suppose. We are out of time, but never out of topic, are we?
Nope.
Go ahead and find us on Facebook if you have more to say. Please do find us on Facebook. Our fan page is there, Positively Revolting. You can also follow along in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. So much to say, no more time to say it. Thank you very much for listening. Next week, we'll have Michael Mead.
Oh, okay. It's first week of membership drive, but Michael Mead, you gotta tune in.
That's right.
It'll be great.
It'll be fun.
You'll like it.
Okay. And with that, go ahead, stay tuned, because coming up at 9 o'clock, Kristen Yant brings us Waterworld.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
There comes a time. Cast your vote.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Porchland Underground Graduate School. Classes that begin in September include The Problem with Privilege, Direct Action Organizing, and Decoding Plants, Seeing Urban Flora with New Eyes. Portland Underground Graduate School is also known as PUGS. Classes take place all over the Portland metro area. Information about registering, future classes, and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Join KBOO Community Radio at Clinton Street Theater on Thursday, September the 8th for United We Stand Up, a comedy show and a benefit for KBOO. I'm T6 and I'll be your host that night, which will feature local comedians like Betty Lungen, Bree Pruitt, Adam Potsey, Brandy Morgan, Belinda Giles, Noriko Ott, and Debbie Wooten. Raffles, refreshments, and good times for all. Again, that's United We Stand Up, Thursday, September the 8th, at Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. Doors at 6:30, showcase at 7:30.